Welcome to the UAlbany News Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah O'Carroll. Creating a deceptive photo or video by combining source material with something added has never been easier. Artificial intelligence software is being used both to make these so-called deepfakes as well as to detect them. With me today is Shui Liu, an associate professor of computer science. His research looks at how to detect in a video whether a face has been superimposed on another person's body. He says the difference can be detected in the blink of an eye.
In the old days, if you wanted to threaten the United States, you needed 10 aircraft carriers and nuclear weapons and long-range missiles. Today, you just need access to our internet system, to our banking system, to our electrical grid and infrastructure. And increasingly, all you need is the ability to produce a very realistic fake video.
They're called deep fake videos. Lawmakers on both sides fear they could become the latest weapon in disinformation wars against the U.S. and other democracies.
Sway, why are deep fakes a problem? I know it might sound obvious, but what makes this form of deception important enough to research, and where are they having an impact?
Well, I think, first of all, as a basic psychology, you know, we humans understand the world heavily relied on the information we get from our visual system. So there are sayings like, you know, seeing is believing, you know, a picture worth thousands of words. And that means that, you know, we truly rely and trust what we see with our eyes as what is happening in the world. So if there's any possible way that we can distort what we are seeing, that is, you know, just hypothetically, that would cause a big problem. And the deep fake is actually playing with this kind of tricks with our eyes. So what they did is basically generating fake videos, in particular, fake face videos. Again, like, we recognize a person, another person, based on mostly by looking at their faces or, you know, listening to their voices. If these are becoming unreliable because we can sort of fake them arbitrarily, then that also distorts our perception in a very significant way, distorting our perception of what is happening. For instance, suppose we see somebody in a place that is at odds with what we usually believe that person should be, and suppose that is actually coming from a video that is being manipulated or synthesized using some software, then once we start making conclusions and making decisions about that situation, that is actually causing the problem, causing the impact. So I would say, you know, the deepfake software is actually potentially, because the way it can manipulate our perception, it will actually causing more impact down the road in the future.
Now, speaking for those who might have relatively little knowledge or exposure to artificial intelligence software, can you walk us through how deepfake technology works?
Okay. So deepfake technology is a recently developed method that can synthesize videos, realistic videos, in particular face videos. So what it does, I always take an analogy, like what I do when I teach my machine learning class at UAlbany, is a machine learning algorithm. You can think about it as a baby, okay? So you want to teach a baby speak some words, or, you know, you teach the baby to recognize some objects, right? So what do you do teaching a baby? You actually give her a lot of examples, right? You show her a picture of an apple. You tell her this is an apple. You show her a real fruit of apple. You tell her this is an apple, right? And hopefully the baby will actually start to make the association of those images and those names. And later on, when she is presented with something else, and she will be able to say, this is an apple, this is not, right? So a deep fake algorithm is doing something like that. And the task is specifically trying to achieve is actually taking one person's face and synthesize using another person's face that is mimicking the original person's facial movement emotion and micro expressions, right? And again, you can think about this as a translation, just not translating languages, but translating facial emotions and facial characteristics, right? Like translation, when I give English sentences, I give you a lot of French sentences, I tell you these are sentences have similar meanings. The software, the algorithm, or the baby actually learn to set up that connection. And the same thing happened here. What do we do in deepfake is actually we get a lot of images of one particular person, and we train a model of that person. And then whenever we got a face of another person that is in the original video, we treat it as, like, say, an English sentence, and that model will actually translate that face into another person's face, like translating an English sentence into French. And then we put that face back into the original video using, again, advanced computer vision technology like face alignment, and then we put the face back either in the video, taking care of those artifacts. When you look at the face, the end result, it looks like realistic fake videos, face videos.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
And this technology is accessible to anyone, not just movie producers with big budgets.
That's right. That's one of the reasons that this deepfake is becoming so popular, because we already have capacity of making realistic fake videos almost 10 years ago. But to be able to do that, you need high-end computers, you need a lot of training, you need to understand all those 3D modeling works in computer graphics. Now, what deepfake changed is essentially lowering the threshold. It is basically a piece of software, and you need to have access to a lot of images of someone, but this is not a problem currently with the internet, right? Facebook and all the photograph portals, you get tons and tons of images of a particular subject. And then and besides, you need a computer that is faster enough and run this machine learning software and hardware on it. And again, that is accessible. I mean, spending a couple of thousands of dollars these days, you can get a very decent computer for doing that. So I think the problem caused by deepfake is essentially lowering the threshold of anybody can make this kind of fake videos.
Well, going back to before you started this project, can you tell me a bit about what your goals were going into it?
We actually got interested in this problem in January during a meeting. One of my colleague and my former PhD advisor, Professor Hani Freid from Dartmouth College, he actually pointed out this problem to me, and we actually started collaborating on solving this problem. We actually, I have been working in this area of digital media forensics for more than 15 years, and this is actually one of the main research themes I'm doing here at UAlbany with my lab. So immediately, because of the potential social impact of this problem, we got interested. So I work with my PhD student, Yuezhen Li, and my colleague at computer science, assistant professor Mingqing Chang. So we started by generating a lot of fake videos ourselves. So we got a copy of the deepfake software. We made some modification to it. We're actually generating better fake videos than anybody else for a while, and we had a lot of fun of that. We made quite a few fake videos, and the way I believe any detection algorithm we can develop, the first step should be understanding how the forgery process goes, and that's our purpose. So we started with generating a lot of fake videos. We observe them. We start coming up with some simple ideas, small ideas to detect, try to detect them. Nothing actually works for a while until one day we're actually staring at the video for quite a long time. This is it's kind of a sort of painstaking and kind of a little bit frustrating, but we always get this kind of eerie feeling. Some of these fake videos do not look right, and until at that moment we realize. It was like all the faces in the synthetic videos, they don't blink. So the kind of weird feeling is like you are in a staring test with your friend, and your friend is not blinking for a whole minute, right? So that kind of feeling, right? It's kind of, it's uncomfortable. So the first time we noticed this, you know, the first thought I had is this must be some sort of artifact of that particular video. And then we go back and check all the videos we generated, and it seems very consistent. No blinking in all the faces synthesized. And then we go back to some of the videos we collected online, and same happened. So that actually gave us a sort of interesting cue that this may be one way we can tell the difference between a fake video and a real video.
Well, that must have been a really neat moment to...
Yeah, it is. It's kind of an aha moment. Yes, it's a kind of a serendipity discovery, in my opinion. Yes, so we go ahead and look for... we work on two things. The first is we want to understand why this happened. I mean, it cannot be a coincidental, just a coincidence. It has to have some deeper reason. And we go back to the original deepfake method and understand it. And we actually figure out there may be a reason for that. And this actually go back to my previous explanation of an AI algorithm as a baby, right? So the baby learn by associating the examples and the labels we gave them, right? And the same thing happened for this deep fake algorithm. It learns to generate faces based on all the faces we give it. And where do we got all those faces? As I mentioned, we need to train. If we want to train this deep fake algorithm, we need tens of thousands of images, and maybe more, of one particular person's face. So usually we get them from the internet. We download all these images. Say, you know, we do a Google search of somebody's name. We got, you know, many, many faces. We download all of them, and we use them as training data for this model. So when we actually look at all those faces using in the training data set of this algorithm, one thing was very striking is we rarely find any face with eyes closed. And this actually is one technical reason why this software has difficulty generating a blinking eye, because it never seen a closed eye. So it's just like a baby. If you have never give her a picture of a banana and tell her this is a banana, when you actually show a banana, she would have a lot of difficulty understanding what it is, right? The same thing happened here, because in the training data, we have no images with eyes closed. And the reason for that is kind of interesting, because for all those images, first of all, blinking is a very transient movement, eye movement, right? So actually capturing blinking in action using a camera is not easy. The blinking usually take less than one tenth of a second. So you know it's really not easy to capture that. But even in some rare moments, we actually capture the eyes closed. When we upload photographs, either ourselves or somebody else, we think those photographs are not good photographs. So there's a bias in the training data set. We actually actively remove those images with eyes closed. So all these artifacts contribute to the fact that the deepfake algorithm has a lot of trouble synthesizing images with eyes closed. So this gives us a first hint of how to detect this kind of fake videos. So subsequently, the second thing our group did is developing an algorithm actually can detect eyes closed, open and closed. And sort of ironically, the way we did that is actually train another deep learning algorithm for detection of eye blinking, sort of using the machine learning algorithm to detect another machine learning algorithm's product. As it turns out that this algorithm works pretty reliably, and we summarized the results in the paper we put online in June on Archive. And ever since, we start to further explore this algorithm. So we keep working along that direction and trying to find more reliable ways to detect this kind of fake videos.
You've been talking about blinking, and I'm wondering about the other gestures or bodily behaviors. What about those and other signals?
Yes, there are actually, this is actually a general theme. Along the way, we're working on detecting deepfake videos using blinking. There was a general theme emerging from this line of work, is using physiological signals to detect fake media. Okay, so physiological signals here, I mean all the signals we can detect that is originated from a human's biological process. For instance, blinking is one, heart beating, breathing, or those macro expressions on faces when we have when we react to certain things we see, and those things are very, very subtle and difficult to fake. They'll be very effective for detecting this kind of fake videos involving human faces or human body. And also it's, as we have been working in this area of digital media forensics, the previous established method are three categories. There are signal-based, there are physics-based, and there are semantics-based. Signal-based just means that we detect the fake media based on any sort of statistical abnormality at the signal level, right? Like JPEG compression or camera noise. And we have work on that, work like that, right? And physics-based is like shadows, lighting. So we put, for instance, two faces in the same image, but they come from different lighting environment. We detect the inconsistency of the lighting environment to be able to know this image is actually actually manipulated. And semantic basis is essentially verifying if this image, this picture or this image is happening at the time and place as it's supposed to be. Or that kind of verification, right? GPS verification. So we think that the physiological signal is a complementary category of this detection, and it has now been extensively explored. So that's going to be one of the main research theme of my lab in the coming years.
So I was going to ask, what's next for this avenue of research? So it sounds like it might be building upon this because it's so new.
Right. Right. I think we'll keep pushing on the frontier of detecting this fake AI-generated fake videos. There are a lot more challenging problems there, and I think blinking is only a first small step. Even though we believe this is the first ever method directly developed to targeting the deepfake generated videos. But I think to be able to do this more reliably, we need more sophisticated algorithms and methods. And that's what we're working very hard on these days.
One of the questions that I have is, technology seems to be eating away at these distinctions from, on one hand, we have the real and the authentic, and then the other, we have the simulated, the created, and the recreated. But it almost feels like it's an arms race where no matter how sophisticated our tools for detection become, well, there's those on the other side that are advancing this dissemination of misinformation, and they're just as savvy technologically. So is this an accurate description, or where do we stand?
Yes, I think you're right. It's an arms race. Exactly. That's the exact word we use. And this is for the particular nature of this line of work. It's very different from other academia research area, because we do have an active, enemy on the other side, which are those people making fake media. And I think this is, there are two levels. My understanding of this issue is two levels. The first, the level on pure research is this, just make this line of work very exciting and challenging. We're not trying to solve a problem that's there, fixed. Right? We're actually working against an opponent. It's like playing a chess game. So we always getting better once our opponent getting better. So I think this make this work challenging, more challenging, and more exciting. On the other hand, I think it does causing a problem, because at a very high level, this is an imbalanced arm race. The people making those false fake media, they actually got more incentive, have more advantage of on their side. On the other hand, you know, the digital media forensics is still, relatively speaking, less known field, research field in computer science. Even though we're seeing a lot more activities recently, but I think we're still at a little disadvantage. But I believe the whole community will working hard and we're catching up.
That actually was a more positive response of saying, you know, right. Well, we might be facing an opponent, but where it makes it more exciting that way versus, you know, we're doomed.
Right. I think every time I gave a few invited talks at the various places, especially for journalists, I also gave a talk, invited talk at Yale Law School. And I think each time I went there, not just presenting my work, but I'm also giving people hope because we're not sitting here idly, you know, letting this this wave of fake media devouring us. They're actually, you know, scientists and researchers trying to use technical methods to stop this this problem. So I think, you know, in general, that's the message people take the most. But on the other hand, I think it by itself, this is a very interesting and challenging research problem, and we'll keep working on that.
And another concern that I would have is that we might be losing even an interest in distinguishing between what's been distorted versus something that's just been filtered so that it looks really nice on our Instagrams or something. I hope that we aren't losing the priority of making sure we believe that there should be a distinction, a separation between what is change and what is truth.
Right. I think that's a more of a philosophical question. Is once we have so much information, and some of this information is very likely is subject to, you know, arbitrary tampering. Can we say what is, you know, what is true and what is false, right? So I use my talk, I use a title called Seeing is Not Believing, Seeing is Deceiving. Because truly, we're facing an era where we have so much information, but we have so little trust in them. And that is what is, I think that to me, that is the most severe problem that this kind of fake media and fake news are creating, right? It's not that they're always fake media, always, you know, some misinformation, but the amount we have right now and the level of easiness that people can make them is really worrisome. And to a certain extent, the worst scenario is we stop trusting everything. And that's what we don't want to see. And that's why, you know, we need all kinds of measures from an individual user's point of view, from the technical point of view, from the ethical journalists, you know, and legal point of view. We need to do some to put some measures in and stop or defer this trend.
Yeah. Well, Sway, thank you so much for sharing your research with us.
Thank you. Thank
really
you.
Important work.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the UAlbany News podcast. I'm your host, Sarah O'Carroll, and that was Shui Liu, an associate professor of computer science. You can let us know what you thought of the episode by emailing us at mediarelations@albany.edu, and you can find us on Twitter @UAlbany News.